Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the podcast Education Transformation, hosted by Lee and Kate Ridge. In this week's discussion, we are joined by special guest Michael Vargas, founder of Lead by Impact, as we discuss the importance of empowering faculty teams. Michael is an international facilitator with 10 years' experience, utilizing his master's in clinical psychology and design thinking background. Michael facilitates workshops and speaks to organizations on developing collaborative and productive team cultures. Lead by Impact supports teams to develop psychological safety, building trust and effective communication. They have worked with organizations such as Dropbox, the American Civil Liberties Union, Evergreen Middle School, the County of San Diego, and many more. So now let's take some time to consider the importance of empowering the faculty members around us. Michael Vargas, founder of Lead by Impact, thanks so much for joining us for this really interesting conversation.
Well, thank you so much, Lee, for allowing me to be here and also for having this conversation on a bigger scale. So thank you.
Michael, you approached us actually. Let's just discuss that for a moment. You approached us proactively about this important vision of empowering faculty members and strengthening teamwork within organizations. Maybe you want to just outline your passion for what it is that you do.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell people I make adults play nice with one another. but joking aside, I mostly work with teams to help them develop their collaboration and increase their productivity. So how do we get people feeling psychologically safe? How do we help them build trust with one another and help them communicate it in a way that's really good for everyone, so that they feel better working with one another and they can also have bigger impact on the things that they want to have impact on? So I mostly do that through a variety or a series of workshops with all types of organizations.
Fantastic. All right, let's try and explore some of that as we go. So if we're looking at a faculty team that's operating with high levels of trust, what characteristics will be on display?
I think some of the biggest characteristics will be this idea that they are able to let go of things that they might be holding on to. So being like, if they want something to be a particular way and there's several other staff that see it in another light, that person is more likely to let go and trust the collective, knowing that the collective has their back. So there's a sense of a lot more collaboration, a lot more teamwork, and a lot less negative friction, a lot less divisive conflict, but much more working together and saying, okay, I'm willing to let go of me, what I want in this moment, so that the rest of the group can really thrive. Mm. I think that's one of the characteristics that you'll see when there's a really strong level of trust. Some others include this idea of they can also not have to tiptoe when there's conflict. So, for example, there was one organization that I was working with, and they were really working on their communication. This was actually with an ambulance company, but this is a great example all around, where the CEO recognized that whenever someone comes up to him and asks him a question, he gives a response very quickly. Because of that, he was missing so much information. He was giving them wrong information, which was causing a lot more time wasted on the back end. So he recognized that he needs to take time to understand what it is these people are talking about and what it is that they actually need. Then on the other hand, the rest of the staff talked about how they need to really take the time to articulate their question so that they didn't spend a whole lot of time asking it and needing to go back and forth. That was the foundation for them recognizing that they need to be a lot more clear in their communication and having an open conversation with that. Eventually, they were able to go with one another. And when they started talking and they didn't understand what was going on, they could just say, hold on, what the hell are you talking about? And laugh about it. And just enjoy that moment and then get to what is needed. So it's those type of experiences that can happen when there's higher levels of trust.
Mm, mm.
Yeah, very important. I think that first point you raised with regards to if you have your own philosophy about how something should be delivered and others around you are suggesting a different approach, if you actually analyse it from the perspective of is there risk associated with what others are wanting to do, and if there's no risk, then why not empower people to take that opportunity on and to implement it their way? Because it just may be a benefit in ways that you hadn't thought of previously.
Absolutely. And it's a moment that we also get to learn from one another. And as people go through that experience and they work together on that, in that experience itself, I think that also helps build more trust as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course it would, because almost like a legacy, that's what you're creating, aren't you?
Absolutely.
So you end up with happy staff, I assume. You end up with that clear collaboration, customer service is going to be enhanced, all of those attributes. You've got a supportive environment, maybe even some more innovation taking place than what you've had in the past.
Absolutely. I mean, it's definitely never done, right? I just want to put that out there for everybody. Mm-hmm. It's not like we ever reach it. But through the active engagement, you'll see those incremental experiences. So I love the fact that you brought up, you know, innovation, which is one of the things I work with organizations. If I trust that you're going to be, and this also ties into psychological safety, which we'll talk more about later. But if I trust that I can bring my idea with you and I feel safe enough to do that, that allows me to share even wilder and crazier ideas. Mm-hmm. And the more one of the elements of creativity is just a sheer amount of ideas. Yep. And so when we deliver that in a space, we can trust that everyone will treat it with kindness and care. Then people are a lot more open to have creative thoughts and try for new things that they never thought about before.
Yeah. I like it. Okay. So how does trust and empathy within a faculty team enhance workplace productivity? Because obviously workplace productivity is a significant component of our focus on a day-to-day basis.
Of course, that's why I like to talk about the both, is the collaboration and the productivity, and collaboration, you know, working well together. But in regards to the productivity, when we're able to, I think a big part of trust is also, like we talked a little bit about it earlier, is kind of letting go of one's ego. And if I'm able to let go of my ego, then I can hear better. I can hear with open ideas, with an open mind, and allow me to understand as best as I can what this person is talking about and what they're trying to bring into the space. And if I have such a huge amount of empathy, meaning that I can understand one side, I can understand the other side, and I can understand everything in between, I believe it creates a much more realistic picture, because what happens is there's a lot of us versus them kind of dynamics in many different organizations. And so having that empathy, having the ability to hear all the ideas, hear all the perspectives, and hold them with true weight, rather than one is less than or more than the other, I think that allows us to have a clear picture of what's going on. With that clarity, now we can be a lot more proactive and focus exactly on what it is that we need to work on, rather than, you know, just kind of shutting down really quickly. I didn't like what they said. Oh, John said this before. He's on that train again. And so we're shutting things down, but it doesn't allow us to see the realities of what's happening. And then it doesn't allow us to move forward. A great example is, I was working with a nonprofit recently, and their leadership team was executives and the directors. The executives, they were more the running of the business elements. And then the directors were kind of the heart of the organization running the services. And those two were in conflict. And that's why I came in. And what we helped them realize over time was that if they slowed down, if they listened to one another, if they worked to understand each other, they were able to actually create a lot better solutions for the business and for the people that they serve as well. And so taking that time to be empathetic with one another so that they actually started having bigger impact, not only on their staff, but also on their community as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's very much about listening.
Listening, working to understand, working to feel this, whatever it is that the other person's feeling, like deeply. I think there's one thing to know, which is in my head, I see it as knowledge is, I have an understanding of something that's in my head, but a knowing is kind of in the body. So how can we develop that knowing of what this other person is really trying to get across?
And so once that's happening and functioning at a higher level, and once there's that trust and that empathy and that integrity within working relationships, then I suppose, you know, the excellence that's on display on a regular basis is seemingly effortless from people looking on from a distance. But really, it's quite a lot of work that's been initiated for the foundation of that process initially.
Absolutely. And what I often say is the work that we're doing here is there's a little bit more work up front, but there's going to be a lot less work on the back end, a lot less fires to put out, a lot less redundancies, a lot less missed tasks, a lot less people leaving the organization and so on, because of this work that we're doing up front.
Yes. Yes. Fantastic. That's right. Well, you're quite right, because, you know, if the workplace isn't proactive and constructive and supportive, then you're going to have those absences, and you're going to have those staff renewal challenges in place on a regular basis, aren't you?
Absolutely. And you'll also have staff who they're just showing up. They're doing whatever they need to do to slide along. And not only that, but when there's talks of something new, they will fight to keep everything as it is.
Yes, yes. And that's a common issue within educational faculty. Certainly, yes. There's always that remnant. That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
How is workplace psychological safety broken? How does it get damaged?
I think some of the biggest ways is when you have someone or you have a group of people, or, you know, sometimes it's one group versus another, a couple people within a group, where someone is trying to share an idea, they're trying to point out something, they're trying to get clarification, they're just opening up and trying to understand or share or anything like that. And the moment that people become ridiculed, they are told that their idea is dumb, they're bad, they're wrong, anything like that, with that in itself will shut people down. And that's a big way that psychological safety is broken, is in the response to how people speak. So that's one of the ways in which it can absolutely be broken. And I think that's really the core of it, is this idea of, if I make a move, if I speak, something will happen to me that will not feel good. So rather than speak up, rather than trying something new, rather than talk about a mistake that I see that people are making or anything like that, I'm just going to stay quiet, because at least I'm not getting ridiculed. So it's a lot of the negative consequences that happens when one tries to be and show who they are through their ideas, their perspectives, their concerns, and so on and so forth. So I think that is kind of the foundation in which psychological safety is broken. I mean, like you said earlier, and this is something a lot of the teachers that I worked with talked about, is there was almost kind of like a divide. There were the new kids in town, and then there were the teachers that have been there for a while. And so the new kids in town had these ideas, but they didn't really know how to speak about it. But when they did, the old folks in town said, no, we've already tried that. It doesn't work. You need to focus on this. That's not a good idea. And shutting it down rather than being curious about it or exploring it more. So I think that those are some of the elements in which causes places or people to not feel so safe.
Yeah, 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 that's right. So if you look at I'm firmly convinced, when I've sat around faculty tables, and I've sat around quite a few over the years, there's always a handful that will be disengaged. People will be, you know, there's a minority of people that will sit there disengaged and not necessarily contribute to team meetings and the like. But I'm sure that it's because of past mistrust, and they're really, it's out of self-protection is what's occurring, rather than just being problematic.
Absolutely. So what I actually have with me is I did a survey with the school that I worked with, mm-hmm. and I asked them, what are the things that prevent people from being safe? So I'd like to share some of these responses with you, if that's okay.
Sure. That'd be great.
Okay. So here, just, these are what teachers literally said that prevent them from feeling safe. Mm. When people are quick to judge, when people talk badly about others, I don't want to come across as a know-it-all mm-hmm. or incompetent. Mm-hmm. I want other teachers to think I'm good at my job. I'm feeling underappreciated and undervalued. People shut down ideas before they're tried. When people say, try something new, they say that that's wrong. I feel mm-hmm. nervous about doing the wrong thing. Fear that I'm going to be misunderstood. Don't feel confident in my own perspective. So yeah. those were just some yeah. of the things yeah. that people identified just off of the survey of where they don't personally feel safe.
Common issues, I think, common issues. Doesn't matter where you are in the world, these are common issues within faculty, because as we've mentioned before we went to air, just in our preliminary discussions, is the teaching, whether you're teaching adults or whether you're teaching school children, the reality is it's a really complex profession in which to work in. And so it's difficult to keep all the cards, so to speak, in your back pocket at any given time. So people need to be given allowances to provide their opinions and their perspectives and have people respect that, as you said before, from an equal perspective. It doesn't matter who's speaking at the time.
Absolutely. Just giving people space. And, you know, that was for the nonprofit that I worked with, that was kind of a bigger issue too, where people wanted to share their ideas, but they were so worried that people were going to focus on them rather than the idea or the problem itself. And so they didn't speak up about it. And so they, like you said, kept it in their back pocket.
Mm-hmm. From a distance, from a consultant's perspective, like from my role, from your role, it's complex, but you can sit there for a few days, you can observe, you can undertake research, you can facilitate surveys and alike and group-based interviews and gather a lot of data. You can relatively quickly pick up on the fact that here are the trends that the faculty groups are challenged with. What are some of those facets that we look at to determine that the faculty's psychological safety is broken? What are some of those examples that we can observe?
Yeah, you know, if we see someone is calling out quite a bit, mm-hmm. right? Or a group of, or quite a few people call out quite a bit, that's yep. definitely an indicator. If people are leaving and coming, right? Turnover rates, that's a
yes.
big one.
Yes.
Yep. So those are very easy to observe up front. I think there are several experiences that we can have that allow us to know or at least get a sense of if there's safety or not. I mean, asking people a very simple question, but maybe a little vulnerable, right? So, hey, where do you see like that a lot of teachers are having challenges? The reason I do a survey is so that I get those answers. But if you do it in a group where people don't feel safe,
yeah,
you're going to have crickets.
Yes, yes. Or you're going to have those individuals speaking on behalf of the group.
Yes, you're going to have the two yes. people who are going to speak for the entire group for the yes. first half hour. And then you're going to need to pause and say, okay, I would love to hear from other people.
As is often the case, yes.
yeah, absolutely. And I think that's often the hardest one is to, when it's, I can deal with someone who's being very loud and verbose. It's a little bit more challenging when people are shut down. But I think that's a really strong indicator that there is a lack of psychological safety. Mm-hmm. Another indicator is asking people, what are the processes in place for certain things like decision-making and such? What do you actually have? What do you do to do that? And when people say, I don't really know, and you get a lot of, I don't knows in how things are done. Mm-hmm. I think that's another sign people don't feel safe, because if they don't know how to engage in a system, in a process, they're fearful of getting it wrong. They're fearful that they might look dumb of not getting it right. They're fearful of, is this system going to work against me or for me? Because they don't know how it works. And I think yeah. that's a really another good indicator of if the psychological safety is broken.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's some really good points there. I recently did some research in preparation for this interview, and I was reading a Gallup report, and they suggest that it takes more than 20% of a pay rise to lure most employees away from a manager who engages with them, and almost nothing to poach a disengaged employee away from the workplace. That's pretty significant, isn't it?
Yeah, that's massive. That is massive.
It is. And I think we can all relate to that. You know, if you have a really good, strong relationship built upon trust, you know your manager wants to know you more than just because what they can get out of you in the workplace, but they really do believe in you and they empower you and they allow you to lead projects and lead them in your way and alike, and to develop innovative teaching techniques and alike. And then that's pretty hard to walk away from if you're looking at another opportunity.
Absolutely. I mean, even just the little day-to-day things of being able to joke around with someone or get to, you know, one of the safest places that I see are places where people are able to lightly tease each other in a way that's fun for them, because they have so much safety built up. They know that there is zero harm done, that they're just doing this because they're just trying to have fun and emotionally connect with the person. Having those type of relationships can be so valuable and so rich. And I had a friend of mine. She was a product manager for a very large tech company, and with everything with COVID, you know, a lot of them had to work from home. Mm-hmm. And she's brilliant for a variety of reasons.
Yep.
And one of the things she realizes, you know, I noticed that we were able to really have a safe culture when we're in our meetings and the cat walks on the keyboard or the kid comes on the person's lap or the dog is barking in the background or their spouse comes in to give them a cup of coffee and no one ever apologized.
Those type
of things, to me, that's really some of the richness that can happen when people feel safe and they could trust each other, knowing that what I'm doing is perfectly acceptable, aka who I am being is perfectly acceptable.
Well, you're right. You know, it's often, you know, people feel comfortable, they feel safe, they feel really an equal in the team when they feel holistically that as a person, I'm acceptable, not just what I can bring from a professional perspective. So I think that's a really important point to raise.
Absolutely. And it also makes me think about, you know, a little bit going kind of deeper in this is management styles.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I also work on is power dynamics. And there's a difference between making someone feel, right? It's not just what it is, but how people feel. Making someone feel like that this other person has power over me, which technically they do if they're your principal, if they're director, so on and so forth. But can this person make me feel like that I have power with them?
Yes, in certain contexts, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Like even just in the regular everyday engagements. And that shift of having someone go try to do the power over to power with can make people just feel so much more safe and so much more comfortable and relaxed. And then you're just going to get way more out of them because they're excited and they feel great to be there rather than being repressed in all the little ways that it can happen.
That's right. That's right. Then you get those innovative conversations happening, as you've raised before, where, you know, we've always done it like this, but what if we tried this or we tried that? And as you say, you know, if you enable that and you support that, and it may not be your ideal approach to dealing with a workplace issue, but you know, if you take the risk, and if there's not a significant risk and it's going to be successful, but it's just a different way of doing things, then allow the person to have a go, because then you'll get more and more of those ideas that can come out of those individuals, and that's what makes a great team.
Absolutely. And that even goes back to the clarity in the process, right? I love that you brought this up, because if we want to take risks, which I'm so grateful that you're bringing this up, because risks can help people feel alive in taking them.
Mm-hmm.
If we have a process in which we take risks, in that in itself, it's not really an overwhelming big risk because they know how much or how little of a risk they can try, because there's been clarity about that and letting people know how they can go about doing that rather than just being terrified of taking any type of risk, which also includes just opening up and sharing a single idea.
Yep, really important. In particular, I think, in the context of which we're all walking with COVID-19 and all the rest, you know, there's so much holistically that people are dealing with. If we support that individual from a holistic perspective, then it can only benefit the organization.
Absolutely. Each, you know, people are people. We can't expect them. I have a friend of mine who says, I can't expect people to be more than what they are, which are just people. And so to engage them, like you said, in a holistic sense, that's going to help them feel safe. Now, we, you know, managers and supervisors don't become therapists or anything like that. Yeah. But if you see someone is hurting, maybe you can encourage them to get a therapist or whatever way, different ways you can support them.
That's right.
As people, rather than just things that are in our way or things that aren't giving me what I need.
Yeah, very important. So we've spoken about it to some extent, but let's try an overview. How can we enhance psychological safety for our faculty?
So this is, I'd like to share just what I did with my, with the work that I did with the school.
Please do.
And the first thing that we did was first, I worked with the principal so that he could tell them all, hey, we know that you're in a system that doesn't always allow you to feel safe. I'm aware of that. And I want you to know that it's not okay and that we are going to work to change this. And in this process, it's about us coming together to figure out how do we create a safe space. And he spoke to them so beautifully because it's not, psychological safety isn't created by one person telling people how we're going to have safety. Psychological safety is really done by the collective.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we first did again was the surveys, the anonymous surveys. So there's kind of two levels that are going on here when you're creating psychological safety. And one is like the process of working with the individuals. The other process is how is the experience that they're going through that is helping create the safety provide safety in it of itself. So for example, the surveys, anonymous survey, anyone and everyone can share their ideas where they don't feel safe. And, you know, how do they envision they want psychological safety to be, and then put it out there without zero worry of any negative repercussions because it's completely anonymous.
Yeah.
So that in itself helps create safety. Then what we worked on is getting everyone to start seeing the perspectives of all the other teachers. And I took all what people said, and then I threw them on because I did this through Zoom. I threw it on a virtual whiteboard so that they could just take some time and really read each other's responses. Mm. And a lot of teachers reported that they weren't even aware that so many teachers did not feel safe. Right. And these aren't bad people. These aren't people who've done anything wrong. They just weren't aware of the extent in which so many staff just didn't feel safe. So the first part is, in a safe way, let's start speaking to it. Let's acknowledge that there's a lot of ways that we're not feeling safe and that we can create safety, and it's up to us. So from there, they were able to pick and identify by voting what are the biggest challenges that are getting in their way of feeling safe. And their biggest challenge was, you know, I don't want to sound like I don't know what I'm doing. Right. Mm-hmm. I don't want to look bad. I don't want to sound like I don't know what I'm doing because I may or may not, but I do want to share these ideas. And this was all in the context of teachers being able to share ideas with one another.
Yeah.
So that was their biggest challenge. Then what they did, I had them journal for like 5 minutes about different ideas that they can come up with about how to create safety for those people who are worried about, you know, looking bad or not knowing. That in itself helps create safety because some people like me are a big mouth who can talk all day, other people process things a lot differently.
Yes.
So giving people the space so they can process on their own way allows for people to feel a little bit more confident, a little bit more secure, and a little bit more safe in talking about what they want to talk about. Then we put them in small groups because it's very hard to share in front of a big group. And that's where they started sharing with one another. And putting in some guardrails, guidelines to help the process, coming from a place of curiosity before judgment, like working to understand before being understood when talking about this. And if you want to support someone's idea, you use the term yes and. I hear what you have to say and I'm going to build on it. And letting them know that we're not judging any of these ideas. We're not even going to pick any of these ideas right now. So save all that stuff for later. Because when people are brainstorming, what happens is they talk about, that's a bad idea, we can't do that. And that is going to kill creativity. So we say, here we are just getting creative. Let's talk about bringing in unicorns and ponies and get ridiculous and free in our ideas. And then later, we can start making choices of how we're going to move forward.
Yeah.
So save that for later. Right now is pure creativity, pure openness. And that, again, in the process of them creating ideas of what they can do to create safety, allows them to feel safe.
That's fantastic.
Then we get all the ideas up. And instead of saying which ideas are bad, they did another round of voting of which ideas do they feel like they want to move forward with. So throughout the entire process, there is nothing about you're bad, you're wrong, this idea is dumb, it'll never work. It's about opening up the space and saying, you know what? Here's the idea that the group wants to get behind. And then letting them know, this is going to be an experiment. We're going to get it not as smoothly as we like. It's not going to be perfect. And that's a part of the process. So letting them know that we don't have to worry about getting it perfect. We're just getting to learn about what's going to work for the team and keep moving from there. So that was just the first workshop. We did several other series. Over time, they were able to identify. They actually liked the process itself. So they identify that when we want to talk about practices, to be able to separate the person from the practice and just kind of put it in a survey so that everyone can see, and then we could just pick which ones we want to talk about.
Okay.
The other part is they identify that a lot of us don't really know one another. And because of that, we don't feel safe because we just don't know. So they also started putting in place kind of like a monthly way to get to know one another without it being school related, without it being about the students, just about one another, just to open up. And they even, at the end of it, they actually created a whole committee to ensure that they continue with developing the safety and also to build the relationships between all the teachers. And they did it together.
Can I just jump in there?
Yeah.
I worked in a adult education institution for 14 years. And at the 12-year mark, one of my trusted colleagues in my team died up and just got cancer, tragically. Ooh. 53 years old. 3 weeks later, he was dead. It's desperately sad. But in that process, we all went to his funeral and there must have been, you know, close to 1,000 people there. He was obviously pretty popular. And when we're looking at the slideshow, we're seeing all these images up of his past life as a big game pro fisherman. That's what he did for a job, and none of us knew that's what he did for a job. That's what he did for a job prior. So you don't know your team, and it's an indictment upon us, isn't it?
It's so true. I mean, because, you know, we feel like there's so much we have to do, and we got to take care of the people that we're serving, and there's deadlines, and there's all parents, and the, you know, everything else that's going on. It's hard to just look at people and say, so what do you like to do for fun?
Yes. It sort of makes you cringe, because then I'm sure we all looked upon him as completely different, but it was kind of too late to recognize those skills.
And what you said, Lee, it happens all over the places. I mean, all different organizations, all different spaces where even just taking an exercise or two to learn about each other will blow people's minds because they didn't know these little things, but these important things about these people that are in their life.
And then you understand how people tick and how they make decisions, and it becomes, you know, very important to understanding how the team is working.
And then that goes back to what you brought up earlier of the empathy and how important empathy is in the space. And that's one of the big ways we can empathize is learning this person's life.
Yeah. Yeah. So this project you've recently completed with this faculty, how many weeks did that run for?
That was approximately 3 months.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So with us in our organization, we run what's known as communities of practice, professional communities of practice, which is very similar to what you're speaking about, where you get individuals in a safe place where they can speak and provide their professional opinions without fear of judgment. As you mentioned before, which I think is really powerful, I wrote it down, curiosity before judgment. Mm-hmm. I like that phrase. And that's pretty important, isn't it? Because what you're trying to do is create a community within the faculty.
Absolutely, Lee. And that's why I'm so grateful that you have this podcast, that you are doing the work that you're doing, because creating a safe space can make such a big difference. So I'm very grateful to hear that you have that. That's a big part of what you do, is just even having a safe environment can change things so dramatically.
And so you came up with all of these ideas through the faculty, and then you set about implementing some of those goals. What were the tangible outcomes from your recollection?
Yeah, so one, there was, like I said, an increased understanding that, okay, here's that other people don't feel safe. Okay, cool. We didn't know that. Now we're all aware. The second thing is they developed an actual process to help teachers speak about their own practices with one another. So they would all fill out a survey. They would all, you know, post it up. They would then split off into small groups, pick which ones they want to talk about, and start talking about the idea rather than it being connected to any person at all.
Yeah.
So now they have that process. So they're starting to work with one another to understand each other's teachings and how they can develop their own practices and so on and so forth. And then the third thing is a committee. So they created a committee that is going to meet every month and talk about, okay, how do we make this a safer space for our faculty and students?
Yeah.
And then what can we do to bring them together? How can we get faculty to learn about each other and understand each other more and just get to know each other as human beings?
Yeah.
So those were some of the specific outcomes that came from that.
And in many ways, you can see how that could easily, over time, as their relationships strengthen, begin to holistically deliver professional development internally from amongst the shared knowledge within each individual.
Absolutely. So I'm going to be meeting with the kind of school's leadership team I think next month, or sorry, I don't have the exact date, but either sometime early or at the end of this month, next month.
Correct.
And working with them to make sure that this continues and flourish. So helping the foundation of the staff get a sense of, oh, okay, the idea of my workshop is not necessarily I come in and tell them what to do. The work that I really try to do with them is to empower them. To empower them to continually make the change. And so getting them all a sense of that, giving them a bit of direction and showing them how they can start doing that, along with helping the leadership cultivate a space and environment for that to happen, that's where we're going to look for the long run.
So important. It really is. It's a complex world. Adult education or school-based education, it is a complex world dealing with humanity on a day-to-day basis, because no day is ever the same. And so to have that collective trust and that support within the team is so important, so critical.
And one thing, sorry, that just came to mind is, you know, the principal who's working there, he has a heart of gold. I mean, he is one of the nicest guys that I've ever met. And he started working there only a couple of years ago. Another thing that was kind of there for a lot of people was the kind of like the traumas of the previous principal.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so they still had a lot of fear of the past of what was going on. So a big part of the workshop was also helping them acknowledge that and then also say, okay, you're absolutely right. That wasn't a good experience. We want to acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. It's very true. And now we get to create a future together. So getting them connected with that future was also a big part for them to kind of do some healing in that process.
Pretty important, because trust is easily taken for granted, professional trust. But when it's broken, it has serious ramifications within the workplace.
Absolutely.
Michael, why don't you take a moment to just share with our listeners the vision behind Lead by Impact?
Our biggest thing is in the name is that impact. So we work with a variety of organizations. We worked with big tech companies. We've worked with, you know, smaller community-based company organizations like ACLU of San Diego and, you know, schools and so on and so forth. Our goal is to really help create a positive impact in the community. And so we're actually looking to, even though the tech companies are fun and very, very profitable, we are looking to do more community-based, community impact type organizations. Like I said, we worked with an ambulance company, a non-for-profit for domestic violence, schools. So we are looking to work with the stakeholders of the community who have a big impact on the community as well, and helping them create an even more powerful impact for the people that they care and that they serve. Mm-hmm. And so we do that by helping them learn how to work well with one another. Like I said, make adults play nice with each other inside so that they can know how to emotionally connect with one another, hopefully have more emotional connections to the community and create more positive impact. So that's really the focus that we're going for. And, you know, I've been playing with, you know, legacy. And I think one element of legacy is to be able to have positive impact on all 50 states, positive mm-hmm. community impact on all 50 states. So that's kind of the little bit of the vision that we're going for.
Great, great. Well, it's a big vision, but you've got to have it, don't you?
It's a very big vision, but, you know, why not?
Absolutely. Let's not limit it to just the 50 states. Let's share your website URL so that all of our listeners across 60 plus nations can listen in and review your website further.
See, Lee, this is one of the reasons why I like enjoying talking to you. You already made my vision way bigger. See, this is what we need more of. So I appreciate that. Our website is leadbyimpact.com. And there you can see about the different workshops that we do. We also have different interviews on there, different resources. So that's where you could find us, leadbyimpact.com.
Michael, thanks so much. It's been a great conversation. I know we've just touched the surface, but what you've shared, your wisdom, your practical experience is really worthwhile to the people listening in. So thank you.
I appreciate that, Lee. And again, thank you for creating a space and environment for us to have these conversations and people to hear something that maybe they never heard before and have a positive impact on them. So thank you for creating this space.
Fantastic. Take care.
Bye.